Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, let me ask you a question. Are you a good listener? And what would your friends, coworkers, and family say if we asked them that question? Well, truth be told, we could all probably improve our listening skills, and that could lead to a stronger marriage, better relationships, and improved parenting. Who wouldn't want those things? All just because we learn how to listen better. Well, today on Connecting Faith, we get to talk with author and life coach Becky Harling about her new book, How to Listen So People Will Talk. Let me tell you a little bit about her, and we'll get her on the show. Becky Harling is a certified speaker, leadership coach, and trainer with the John Maxwell team. She speaks nationally and internationally at conferences, retreats, and training events. The founder of Moms Unleashed and author of several books, including the 30-Day Praise Challenge and the book we're going to talk about today, How to Listen So People Will Talk. Becky and her husband, Steve, live in beautiful Colorado Springs. Welcome, Becky.
Thanks, Joe. It's delightful to be here with you.
Well, it's great to have you on. I think that all of us could probably be much better at listening, and at least some of us think that we're good listeners, and we may not be, I'm finding, by reading your book. One of the turning points in your understanding of how to communicate, you write, came from just a conversation that you had with your teenage daughter. Tell me a little bit about that and how you came to write this book.
Yes. You know, here's the thing, Joe. Never ask your teenager a question unless you're fully prepared for them to be honest. And so I asked my teenage daughter, hey, Bethany, how well do you think I listen? And honestly, I was expecting rave reviews. I thought, I have this nailed. I'm a good listener to my kids. And so as I was imagining these rave reviews, in my mind, there was a long pause. And then Bethany said, well, sometimes you listen well, but you seem distracted a lot. You interrupt me a lot, Mom. Sometimes when I'm telling a story, you dive in with your own story. And, you know, you give me a lot of advice. And I don't really want the advice. I just want to feel validated by you.
Hmm.
Well, that was a wake-up call in my life. And I remember laying in bed that night thinking, aren't I supposed to give her advice? I mean, I am her mother. And as a mother, I was born to talk. And so I began to pray, and God began to show me that I needed to change if I valued this relationship with my daughter. And so I had to really go before him and say, Lord, I need you to change me and teach me how to be a better listener.
Well, it seems to take quite a bit of humility to ask God that question, first of all, but then ask people for feedback. And yet you write that honest feedback is actually really important if we want to listen better.
Yes, absolutely it is. Because, you know, we have a perception of ourselves, Joe. We love to think of ourselves as listening. And we imagine conversations in our head after they happen, and we think, oh, I was fully tuned in, when maybe we really weren't. And so it's important to get honest feedback in order to have the motivation to grow.
So how does a person go about asking for honest feedback, and who would you recommend that we ask first?
Well, I actually have a survey in the book, because since I experienced this, I like other people to join me in that. And so in the first chapter, I dare them to ask three people that are close to them. So it could be your spouse. If you're a parent, I definitely recommend having you ask one of your kids how well they think you listen. It could be a personal friend. It could be a parent. It could be a coworker. Somebody that will really dare to be honest with you. You know, somebody who loves you, but who's going to be honest with you and tell you how you come across in situations.
Well, and I love how you put that listening quiz right at the beginning of the book, because then we can say to ourselves, okay, we have some work to do here. Let's keep reading.
Yeah, it's kind of the motivation to read the rest of the book.
Absolutely. I love that because sometimes we do think we're better listeners than we are, don't we?
Oh, absolutely we do. You know, I think a lot of times I can spot someone else who's not a great listener. And then as I sit and I reflect about that, it dawns on me, oh, my word, I've done the exact same thing, you know. And so I know that the Lord needs to keep working on me in this area.
Well, and isn't that true? I know there are friends of mine who I will spend time with over coffee or going for a walk or something, and I feel incredibly refreshed and energized and just heard after I spend time with them, and I realize what a great listener they are, and that's probably why I get to leave as being the recipient, of course, of that great listener listening. I get to feel really great about myself in that conversation, and so it does make me wonder, do they feel that way when they're leaving that conversation with me?
Yeah, it's remarkable because honestly, 80% of a really good conversation is listening. And so if you reflect back on conversations that you felt really, really good about, oftentimes the remarkable thing is you did all the talking and the other person really listened to you, and that makes you feel loved. And those, I'm not criticizing that because we all need that. We need to be heard. In fact, David Augsburger has a fabulous quote that I use in the book, and he writes that to feel loved is so closely linked to feeling heard that the two are almost indistinguishable. That's a staggering thought when you think about it, because we feel deeply loved when we're heard, but what about people who are journeying through life with us? Like, do our spouses feel heard? Do our kids feel heard? What about our coworkers or our church friends or our neighbors? Do they feel heard and loved?
So when someone obviously feels heard, that translates into love and it probably builds a stronger relationship. What are some of the benefits to listening well?
You know, it's mutually beneficial. That's what's amazing, because God has wired our brains with these neurotransmitters that are called mirroring neurons. And in other words, like, let's say you and I, Joe, are out for a cup of coffee and you begin opening up about a problem that you're having with maybe your teenage daughter. And as I'm empathizing, as I'm feeling that with you, as I'm getting into your shoes with you, in other words, and really imagining what that feels like, both of those neurotransmitters in our brains are stimulated. And as a result, there's a stronger connection that builds between us. There's a stronger friendship that builds, and there's a stronger bond that builds. So it ends up being mutually beneficial.
Well, that just gives us even more motivation to learn how to listen well. How do we begin to build the skills to communicate better?
You know, I think it begins when you take a look, you know, you give people around you that quiz, and then you honestly, in fact, I would recommend getting alone with the Lord, taking that, the answers that people give you, and then asking the Lord to help you on this journey. I think one great way to start is to ask yourself, how much space do you create in your day to hear the stories of other people? Our stories are very important to us. And, in the book, I share a story about being on sabbatical with my husband, Steve. My husband, Steve, was raised on the mission field in the country of Nigeria. And in 2014, we had the opportunity to go back there and go back to his childhood home. And it was life-changing for both of us. But one of the most remarkable parts of the journey was when we drove onto the campus of the boarding school where Steve was dropped off at age 7 or 6. And when we drove onto that campus, my husband is a very strong leader, and I had never seen what I saw that day. He literally buckled over with sobs as he began to remember being dropped off as a little boy. And later that afternoon, we talked deeply he talked. I listened, you know, and I haven't always been a great listener to my husband. You know, I mean, I think I thought I was, but sometimes I would do things that would deter him. On that day, I knew I was on holy ground, and he began to pour out his heart about what it was like to grow up as this little kid in Africa and what that did as far as shaping his faith. Well, by creating this space to hear that story and really listen to that story, you know, Steve and my heart became more fully knit as one. And so one of the suggestions I have in the book is creating at least 15 minutes a day to listen to the story of your husband or wife's day at work, to listen to the stories of your kids when they come home from school, to listen to the stories of your neighbors or your coworkers or your friends. So listening to stories. Another tip that I give in the book is to silence your inner fixer.
Mm-hmm. I love that part. I think we all have a little bit of that, but I think it's especially poignant when you just think about how we all want to, I don't know, share our wisdom or impart our wisdom even when not asked. And so tell me more about what that means to silence the inner fixer and why that's important.
It's very important. You know, I think we really mean well, Joe. A friend will open up to us about, let's say, the fact that their baby's not sleeping through the night. And we have the answer. We just know they need to do X, Y, and Z, and their child's going to sleep through the night and all's going to be well. But here's the interesting thing. People, when they open up about their problems to us, they don't want us to fix them. They just want to feel heard. I'll never forget walking up a hill with my husband, and he was sharing some problems he was having at the church we were serving, and I knew exactly what he should do. And I told him so. And then, again, there was that long pause, and he said, you know, Beck, when I share my heart with you, I am not looking for you to fix it. I'm looking for you to listen, and I can figure it out myself. I just want you to listen and hear me and allow me to process my thoughts out loud. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a challenge for some of us, Joe.
Oh, certainly, especially because we're not really sure what our role is, how helpful it was for him to say, I just need you to listen and so that I can share my thoughts. And not everyone can articulate that.
Yes, that's true. But pretty much, I would say 90% of the time when people are sharing their problems, they just want to be heard, unless they ask you specifically, hey, I'm looking for your advice here. You know, we live in a world where we are so quick to give other people advice. You know, I asked this question on Facebook when I was writing the book, and I got between 50 and 100 answers of people who had been given unsolicited advice who found it just annoying.
Mm. Even my husband has learned to ask that question before he responds. Would you like me to give you some advice on this, or do you just want to have me listen? And that way it allows me to think, well, do I want to hear his opinion, or do I feel better just having said what I needed to say? And so it's part of our conversation, and that works really well for us.
Yeah, that's a great technique, particularly in marriage. And I think just when you're out in conversations with your girlfriends or with your kids, really go slow on the whole advice thing, unless you ask the other person, hey, are you looking for me to give you my opinion on this, or do you just really want to feel heard? For some people, that question might be a little shocking to them because maybe they hadn't thought of it before. Mm-hmm. But for other people, they'll deeply value that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking with Becky Harling today about her book, How to Listen So People Will Talk. Build stronger communication and deeper connections. We'll talk more with Becky about some tips and maybe some ideas on how we could listen better and how that's going to improve our relationships. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Highs and lows, I will be by your side.
Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We're talking about listening today, and couldn't we all do just a little bit better to improve those relationships that we have by being a good listener? How good are you at this? I know I struggle sometimes, and I certainly know when I'm talking to someone who isn't a very good listener. Becky, how do we find out how we're not being a good listener?
Well, for starters, we ask, how well do you think I listen? And we receive whatever the person tells us. We don't become defensive. We don't push back. We just receive what they say, and we take that, you know, before the Lord. And sometimes it can be even helpful, Joe, to tape yourself in a conversation and tell the other person, hey, I'm working on my listening skills. I want to know how I'm coming across. Because you might be shocked at how often you interrupt. I mean, I find that shocking about myself. I'm a Christian speaker. I was born to talk, right? So it's very easy for me in a conversation to interrupt. And so I have to be cognitive about that fact. And I have to ask God to change that about me. One thing that can be helpful too that I recommend is setting some time aside to reflect back on conversations where you didn't come across as a good listener, or you know that about yourself, and you reflect on what was going on in your heart. What were you looking for out of that conversation? You know, why did you jump in with your own story? Were you looking for validation? Were you looking for a compliment? Were you feeling insecure? You know, and just take a look at what's going on in your heart, because I am a firm believer that as people who follow Jesus, we have to be self-aware, not necessarily self-focused. We don't want to be self-focused. We want to be Jesus-focused. But we have to be aware of how we're coming across to other people.
What are some of the reasons, Becky, that we don't listen well? There has to be something going on inside of us that prevent us from doing those things that you've just mentioned, to be self-aware and to be focused on that other person.
You know, I think we are insecure sometimes. Sometimes we're so caught up in our own problems. Like, you know, let's say that you're walking through something horrific in your life. It could be cancer. It could be a big problem with one of your children, or a problem in your marriage. And you mean to listen well, but because there's this big looming problem, you're focused on that and you're not focused on the other person. Or it could be that you're distracted. You know, life is busy. We are such a fast-paced society, aren't we? So we like to cram our calendars with activities. And, you know, when you're flying through life, and you're going fast, and you're moving from appointment to appointment to appointment, you can't be a good listener. Because to be a good listener means you're going to have to slow down and create the space to listen to people. So it can be a variety of different things. It could be, you know, you're focused on a problem. It could be that you're moving through life too fast. It could be that you're feeling insecure about your own stuff, your own role, so you feel the need to shout your news about how great you're doing to get the validation you're looking for. You know, I don't know, but that's why we have to listen to our hearts under the influence of the Holy Spirit, so that we can listen to what's really going on in our hearts, and we can dare to lay aside some of our stuff to really focus on another person.
Boy, even focusing on ourselves, I mean, we could apply that listening logic for listening to the Lord as well. Because I remember having a conversation with a life coach where I was just talking about prayer, and I feel like I'm talking all of the time. And she said, do you ever just stop and listen for a while and let it be silent? Talk about that. I know that's a big part of your life as well, is making time and space to hear from the Lord.
It is, Joe. And I find, because I'm a high energy person, I do go at a fast pace. But what I've learned is that I need significant time in God's presence every day. I call it FaceTime. You know how you FaceTime a friend on your phone? Well, I need that face-to-face time with Jesus every day. And as part of that, I need just quiet. I will light a candle and just sit quietly and say, Lord, speak. I do spend some of the time listening to worship music and certainly some of the time reading my Bible. But I am, the older I get, the more aware I become that God wants to speak to me. He wants to speak to me through His Word, through the still small voice that He uses. And here's what I've learned about God. He doesn't seem to scream over the confusion in my life. He doesn't seem to scream over the chaos in my life. So I need to create the quiet so that I can actually hear His voice.
Oh, that's such great advice. And I think people listening today, maybe that was just a great nugget. And the reason that they're listening is they need to create that space. Becky, that is so hard to do in the lives that we lead today. Can you give just some great, encouragement for someone to think this is absolutely what I need to do and how to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people often ask me, especially in my role as a life coach, how do you balance your life, Becky? We see everything that you do. And, you know, I will pull back and I will draw a big circle. And I would recommend this for your readers or your listeners. I mean, draw a big circle. And then within that bigger circle, in the center of that circle, put a circle and put God. And then reflect on, okay, God is the center of my life. How much time do I spend with Him? Is this important to me? Do I want to know God? Do I want to hear His voice? And work out from that. And then around that, make like spokes going out to the outside of the circle. Like, where does my husband get time? What time do I spend with my kids? What about my career? Or what about my friends? Or what about self-care? And map it out. But when life starts to get out of balance, pull out that circle again and say, what am I doing as far as nurturing my time with God? And I, you know, for me, Joe, I need time in God's presence every day. And so I schedule that. For me, that works best when I first get up in the morning. I make coffee and I have time with the Lord. For me, that's an hour, hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on what I have going on in my calendar. I've learned that the more crazy my life gets, the more time I need mm-hmm. in God's presence.
That's the truth, isn't it?
But for some people, they do that better at night. So I'm not saying you have to do it in the morning, but just plan it. Be intentional.
Well, intentionality seems like it's a big part of course, our life with God. It's also a big part about building relationships with other people. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk more with Becky Harling about how to listen so people will talk. How do we strengthen those relationships of those we care about the most? And how do we be a better listener? We can give you some tips on that. And if you're listening today and think, hey, I'd really like to have a copy of that book in my hands, well, you can go online to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and there's a spot there where you'll be able to submit your name and contact information. And we'll do a drawing for one of Becky's books at the end of the show and contact you that way if you are one of the lucky recipients. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Joe Bender. Very pleased today to be speaking with Becky Harling. Becky is a certified speaker and leadership coach. She's a trainer with the John Maxwell team. She's also the founder of Moms Unleashed and the 30-Day Praise Challenge. She's also the author of a new book, How to Listen So People Will Talk, Build Stronger Communication and Deeper Connections. Well, Becky, we've been talking a bit about listening, what a benefit that is to the people we're in relationship with, whether that be your spouse, your friends, or your Lord, and just how beneficial that can be to us as well. But you mentioned that to be a good listener, we also need to manage a little bit about the outside of our body. Tell me about body language, and do we just do some things unconsciously?
Oh, man, do we ever. You know, again, you know, I for those of us that have raised kids, kids tend to speak pretty truthfully about everything, right? They're not going to usually lie to you. And so, you know, I learned, especially when my kids were teens, that if I looked shocked when they were telling me something, they would immediately shut down and stop talking, right? Or if my face looked angry, they would stop talking. And so I had to literally practice in front of the mirror. How do I look when people are talking to me? You know, am I smiling? You know, a smile can go a long way, Joe. Actually, Michael Hyatt is a New York Times bestseller, and he talks about when he began speaking and his agent that would get him the speaking would stand in the back of the room because Michael was a fairly intense speaker. And the agent would say, Michael, you're doing great, but you don't smile and it's intimidating to people. So he would stand in the back of the room and signal for Michael to smile. And I love that because it's such a simple thing. And yet it's something that we forget. You know, we may be worried about things in our world, and so we forget to smile. But an inviting face that smiles, people will be more willing to talk to. If you have teenagers, I suggest practice your body language and practice getting them talking when you're in the car because you're driving and your face is forward and you're focusing on the road and they can't see every face you're making. But our body language speaks a lot. You probably have been in a conversation with somebody where there's been a little bit of tension and you may notice that the person takes a step back and crosses their arms. Well, what are they signaling you? They're signaling you, you've come far enough. I'm protecting myself. I'm putting a boundary here, and they may not want to go further in the conversation. So our body language speaks a lot.
Well, and it seems like we can be very inviting too, and leaning in maybe would be a better scenario than backing up. All of those things seem to communicate, yes, I want to hear more from you. And I found that when I'm listening to someone, I definitely look at if they cross their arms or if they start, which is what I despise the most, if they pick up their phone and want to check something or I mean, that's a pretty sure sign that that conversation's coming to a close, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, leaning in when a person talks is one of the most loving things you can do. And I love that you mentioned that because I forgot to mention that. And when I'm in a conversation with a friend, if they lean forward to hear me, I feel so heard and so loved. And so I want to offer that to other people. Our phones are perhaps one of the biggest distractions and one of the key factors why we are not great listeners, because we have everything on our smartphones, right? We have our email, we have our Twitter accounts, our Facebook accounts, our Instagram accounts. We have every kind of account out there. And our phone, we need to put it away when we're in a conversation with people. I remember one time I was taking care of my little grandson, Joshie, and at the time he was two, and my son Josiah got home from work to pick him up. And he had had a rough day at work and he was on his phone and he was scanning email messages, drinking a cup of coffee, telling me about his work day all at one time. And meanwhile, Joshie was running around saying, Daddy, look at me, watch what I can do, you know, blah, blah, blah. And finally, Joshie reached up, grabbed JJ's phone out of his hand and said, Daddy, phone down, listen to me. And I thought that's pretty profound coming from a two-year-old, you know, and my son Josiah and I both laughed. But the truth is, we need to put our phones away when we're in conversation with people. And I would even say, Joe, when people are at work, you need to be really careful because it can really take away from your credibility. If you're in a staff meeting and you're scanning email messages or texting people or on Facebook, that's a great way to take away your credibility. You don't want to do that. You want to come across as a person who's fully present and engaged.
Oh, that's such a great point. And, you know, a lot of the conversations I think that are in my mind that you and I are talking about are these one-on-one conversations. But you just opened up that you can be a good listener when you're sitting around a table with several people as well and not be distracted by something like your phone or a report or just staring out into space. So listening is more than just one-on-one, isn't it?
It totally is. And, you know, in the workplace, if you look at the people who you work with and you think through different staff meetings or committee meetings, think about the people that you respect the most. Often, those people are not the people that are just talking. You know, have you ever been in a meeting with a person who just cannot stop talking. That person loses credibility in the workplace. And so, my husband always says, speak low, slow, and last. When you're in a meeting, listen well to the different opinions that are out there. And then when you speak, make it count. And you'll gain credibility, because people in the corporate world, people in the ministry world, people in the business world are watching the way you listen. And that's either going to earn you credibility or tear it down.
Oh, that's such a great point. You know, another thing you mentioned about really trying to maybe draw things out of people if we're being a good listener is to ask a lot of questions. In fact, you tell a great story about how you learned to ask questions by doing a juggling exercise. Can you talk a little bit about that and how we can learn to ask good questions?
Yes, I am a John Maxwell trained coach. So at the live training event that I attended, the faculty member that was teaching us about coaching put three balls on the tables. So you had to pair up in couples, and you had to teach the other person how to juggle. And so the person would be juggling, and you could hear people saying, no, throw it higher, throw it faster, spread your hands out more, or maybe you need to watch closer. And juggling, you could hear laughing all over the room. Nobody was improving. And then they said, okay, now this time we don't want you to give any instructions. You're only allowed to ask questions. And so you would ask the other person, what do you think went wrong there? How could you change that? How might that improve? And you know what was amazing? People's juggling improved. Now, none of us were jugglers. That's what's incredible. There was no juggling champion in the room. It was just people learning how to coach. But that's the point of asking questions. You draw people out, you discover information yourself, and you lead them to discovering what they need to do to solve their situation. And it's remarkable how it changes and how it bonds you to another person. And so the best mentoring relationships happen when the mentee comes prepared with five or six questions that they want answers to, or pages of questions. You know, because then you're actually helping them with where they want to grow. And I thought that was great. You know, the people that have grown the most in their personal walks have learned to ask great questions.
Well, and questions help a lot if we're dealing with a situation where there might be some conflict or disagreement as well. You've mentioned that sometimes instead of immediately pulling back and getting defensive, we should actually ask more questions of the person who might say something that could come across as offensive.
You know, conflict for me, Joe, was a big deal. It has taken me a long time to learn to manage conflict. And yet conflict is going to be a part of every relationship, right? And what happens in a conflict is we find that our adrenaline rises and we want to dive in to defend our position. A good example of this is just look at how polarized our country is politically right now. And so let's say you talk with somebody from the opposite political side as you, they want to dive in with their opinion and convince you why their point is true. But what would happen in that confrontation if you just asked questions and put the focus on seeking to understand rather than trying to prove your point? Because so many conflicts could be resolved that way, just even between a husband and a wife. Let's say you're having a conflict over money issues, which seems to be a rather common conflict. And let's say one of you is spending more than the other one feels is necessary. Instead of defending your position, ask questions to seek to understand the other person's heart. Because in doing that, you'll realize or you'll gain understanding into your partner and what's making them make the decisions that they're making. And it's a much better way to solve conflict.
Well, and I love that tell me more question that you highlight, because it seems like that can really open up and not stifle any conversation where you are disagreeing somehow.
Yeah, you know, it's so intriguing. I love that you brought that up, because when a person is really emotional, and when they're angry and they're really lashing out at you, which happens in each of our lives at one point or another, there's an emotional side of their brain that has taken over. And so if you try to reason with that person, or you try to defend yourself, or you try to convince them of something else, they're not able to switch out of that emotional side of their brain. And it's just going to explode more. Like the example I use in the book is of our teenage daughter. A different teenage daughter was having a really rough week. Bad week in AP history, bad week with friends, bad week in school. And on top of that, she was mad at me for something I had done. And so I went into her room to try to talk about it. And she kept saying, "And you did this, Mom." And I would say, "But that wasn't what I was trying to do. And I was trying to defend myself, right?" Well, the more I tried to defend myself, the more emotional she got. Finally, my husband knocked on the door and came in, thankfully, and said, "Hey, Becky, let me take over." And he just stepped in and he just said, "Tell me more." And then he just held her and let her dump all of what was bothering her. And he never said a thing other than, "Tell me more." Mm-hmm. And that is such a wise lesson, because, again, when a person is really angry with you or really upset, they are not able to switch out of that side of the brain. And so the best thing you can say is just, "Tell me more. Help me understand."
Well, and you also mentioned that it helps to slow the conversation down a little bit, which sounds like that conversation was moving very rapidly between you and your teenage daughter, and your husband yep. kind of slowed it down and gave you time to pause and pray about the thoughts you might have going wild in your mind, and maybe for her as well. How important is it to pause and pray to slow things down a bit?
It's very important, you know, because, again, when you're in a conflict, your adrenaline rises, you tend to talk faster, and as a result of that, things are said in that conflict that maybe you wouldn't normally say. And so instead, pause. You know, put your hand over your mouth if you have to. Put your hand over your mouth and pray, "God, put a guard on my mouth and help me to only say what's beneficial here." And just slowing things down like that can make a huge difference in the conflict.
Oh, my goodness. I pray that prayer every time I go into a meeting, no matter what the meeting's on, because I just don't. I want to be like your husband said and speak last and make it meaningful. Don't be the person who's just speaking out of turn because it's uncomfortable to be silent. So God putting a hold on our mouths is probably always pretty beneficial.
Absolutely. Well, Becky, helps us learn how to listen.
I need to take a quick break, but we'll come back and talk more with Becky Harling about her book, How to Listen So People Will Talk. And if you're listening today, you'd like to get one of these books in your hands. Well, we hope that you'll just go to our website at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. You'll be able to submit your name and contact information there. We'll do a drawing at the end of the show and hopefully get one of Becky's books in your hands. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Pleased to be speaking with Becky Harling today about her book, How to Listen So People Will Talk. Becky, you write quite a bit about what it means to be empathetic and why that's important for us. What are some questions that we could ask to be more empathetic and bring that to the conversation that we're having with another individual?
Yeah, you know, to be empathetic means that we're going to seek to understand what the other person is feeling. We might not understand or always want to validate their actions, but we want to understand what they're feeling. And to be empathic basically means that we have the ability to crawl into someone else's situation. And I think the most beautiful example of that, honestly, is Jesus, because he left heaven to crawl into our mess here on earth so that he could die and redeem us and bring us back into right relationship with the Father. And so when you are seeking to empathize with someone, say, "Tell me more," that's for sure. Like we talked about in a conflict, that will really help you empathize with somebody. You know, how did that make you feel? Ask feeling questions. You know, what do you wish had been different in that situation? How did the other person respond to that? Try to draw out feelings from the person so that they feel heard in that situation. That's what it means to offer empathy. You want to get across the feeling, I understand why you feel that way. It makes sense to me. And I'm so in there with you. You know, whether it's grief or anger or jealousy or whatever.
Boy, there are just so many things that I feel like we've talked about today that if we could combine them, it would greatly improve our listening skills to lean in, to ask feeling questions, to eliminate distractions, to be present, to not be a fixer, and to just deepen your relationship. As we are thinking about the combination of all these things, what do you find people struggle with the most in just getting started saying, I am going to be a better listener?
You know, that's such a good question. I think it would be a toss-up between wanting to fix other people's problems. But so that's close to the top. But I think probably the top one is just we are such a distracted society, Joe. We have so much in our daytimers. We are so busy. And as a result, we fly through life at a rapid pace. And when we're doing that, we're just not focused on those around us who maybe we're trampling over because we're not taking the time to really listen to them. You know, it's better to walk through a room slowly, to take note of the people in your workplace, to take note of the people in your neighborhoods, in your family, to create the space to listen to them, to really be present to them, and to ask God, Lord, listen through me today and help me to be present to those I love.
Well, and men and women seem like they may handle conversations a little bit differently. I mean, my husband laughs about things like that all the time. If we get in the car after some sort of mixer or a birthday party or something, and I say, oh, did you get to talk to so-and-so? And, hey, how are they doing with the adoption of a child? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, well, what's going on? I don't know. And yet, I'll have talked to maybe one or two people, but I'll have had a really deep conversation, and he'll have talked to 75 people and know a lot of things except no deep conversation. So men and women must be a little bit different, or maybe it's just he and I.
Well, men and women are different for sure. I mean, women, we get the bonus here because we're much more able to empathize according to scientific research that's been done. Whereas men, sometimes I'll say to my husband, Steve, in an ever so loving way, mind you, Joe, I'll say, you know, I don't feel like you're really listening. And he'll say, oh, I am. I can tell you every word you said. And so he can tell me every word I've said or close to it, but he didn't get the point behind what I was trying to tell him. And I think the difference between being able to repeat what a person says is to be able to really enter into that conversation. That's where that empathy muscle comes back, you know, because if you talk to somebody, you can say, well, how are you doing today? They say fine. And you think, oh, I'm a great listener. But you didn't ask, like, how is it going with that adoption? You know, what are the stumbling blocks you're hitting? What's it been like to raise the money for that adoption? Or where's the court system in this? You're not asking more questions to keep them talking, mm-hmm. You know? And so you want to enter into conversations fully present, really wanting to know and understand what's going on in the other person's life.
Well, and we giggle about the fact that God had put us together for a reason. He can collect a very high volume of information, and then I can just collect a very deep amount of information from very few people. So it works out. Somehow we make a good team.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, husbands are amazing, and then that you just when you think, well, they're just collecting a little bit of information and then they're on to the next thing, they can totally surprise you.
Sure.
And really enter in.
That is very true. Well, when we're talking about just creating that space, I mean, you've just mentioned how important it is to be present for people, but it's also really important to be present for your spouse. And that seems to be something that is a bit of a challenge as well as in our busy lives. So how do you and your husband work that out to make sure that you carve out time for each other to listen well to each other?
Yeah, that is a great question that no other interviewer has asked me yet. So thank you for asking that. You know, right now at this season of our life, Steve has become the president of a mission. And so we get to travel together quite a bit. And in the beginning, when we were doing these trips, we would visit a field and do teaching with the missionaries and do team meetings with the missionaries and see how everybody was doing. And we found in the beginning that when we would land on the field, people would have us scheduled from like 7 a.m. till, no joke, 11 o'clock at night.
Mm.
And Steve and I, after a couple of those trips, looked at each other and thought, this is unsustainable. We have to change this. And so now we tell people, hey, we need time together. So, and we need time with God. And so when we're on these really demanding trips, we'll take a break. We'll go for a walk together and just be together. No matter what country we're in around the world, we'll take a long walk together. We'll just decompress. We may be quiet for a while, but we're also listening to each other. When Steve gets home from a trip, I know that maybe I wasn't on, or I get home from a trip that he hasn't been on. We'll set aside some time to go out to dinner together, to just focus on each other, to just talk together. You know, when Steve first gets home from the office, if I'm home first, I'll make sure the TV's off. I won't pick up my phone. I'll just be present to him, because I realize, like, I'm his safest person. And he's my safest person. And that means that I need to be there for him to really hear his heart.
Mm, such a good point. And I know when my husband and I get together, we call it schedule-free zone, because that means we get to focus on each other and not on our schedules or the schedules of our children, which seems to take up 90% of our lives. And so to give that dedicated time, I think it really takes an intention. It's so hard to do. So I can only imagine how difficult it is when you're traveling that much as well.
But, you know, it's almost easier now than when we were in the thick of raising the 4 kids. So I will say that, because when we were raising the 4 kids, I mean, their schedules were insane, right? You had kids in soccer, you had mm-hmm. them in music lessons and all of that. And there's always something going on with one of the kids. And during that season of life, what we did is we had on our calendars, we always had breakfast together out. We would do breakfast out one morning a week, just Steve and I. And we would try to set parameters around it. Like, we're not going to talk about the kids during this time, unless there was something big that we really needed to communicate about. Or we're not going to talk about ministry. We're just going to talk about how we're doing as a couple. And, you know, I am a firm believer, Joe, in one date night a week. I think there's a lot that pulls at our lives. There's tight schedules. There's financial pressures, but if you really want to keep your marriage alive, you're going to prioritize one date a week and just be there for each other, because life goes quickly.
Well, I think we just figured out the subject for your newest book, Becky, so you can just start writing on communicating with your spouse. You can just start working on that, and I'll have you back as soon as that's done. How does that sound?
Thank you. My publishers will love that you came up with an idea for me.
Excellent. Well, I'm just so grateful that you took the time to help us all to become better listeners. And of course, you can get your own copy of Becky's book, How to Listen So People Will Talk, by going to her website as well. And we have all of that communication on ours at myfaithradio.com. You can get in better contact with Becky that way. Becky, thanks so much for joining us, and blessings as you continue to teach people to listen better.
Oh, thanks, Joe. It's just been a delight to chat with you. Thank you so much.
Same here. And thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.